Good morning, Teachers on Fire. Welcome back to another conversation here on the Teachers on Fire podcast. My name is Tim Cavey. I'm the host of Teachers on Fire, and today I'm speaking with Brian Glover. Brian has served as a middle and high school teacher of science, a principal, and a district administrator. He's back in the classroom this year trying to bring to life a vision of learning that centers students' curiosity, agency, and creativity. You can follow Brian on X at Brian G. EDU. Brian, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Are you ready to light it up?
I am ready, Tim. Thanks for having me.
That's so good. It's my pleasure to have you here. Why don't you start by telling us a little bit more about your current context in education?
Sure. I'm currently serving as a high school biology teacher. I also serve as an instructional coach for a brand new teacher to science, and I'm part of the instructional cabinet at a grades 9 to 12 high school for music and theater, and we are located in Brooklyn, NYC.
So fun. All right. Well, right in the heart of it, one of the larger cities, certainly one of the most iconic cities of the world. That's pretty special. Brian, it is story time. So share with us, if you would, about a low moment or an experience of adversity that you faced somewhere in your teaching or education career and describe how you overcame it.
I think I'll actually start by talking about a low point like this year. You know, as you mentioned earlier, I have returned back to the classroom. I've seen a lot in my years moving through the education system in New York City, and I was just really intent on like working with kids again to bring a new vision for learning to life. And I have really found myself kind of getting caught up in the constraints of the system though. So welcoming myself back to a classroom means that we are also bound to things like state examinations and all of the other constraints that happen in a typical school setting that when you're in dreamland, you know, those things, you know, don't necessarily live in that space. And so it was an awakening moment to realize, you know, again, all of the constraints that can weigh on a teacher's work, and then finding ways to push through the constraints or to find a way to find balance with them so that you can still achieve the goals that you want to achieve. I'm also very lucky in that, you know, while I haven't brought like my high point of my lessons to life, I have made a lot of progress in a lot of ways. And I'm trying to take note of like the really positive things that are happening in the classroom. Even my school leader, you know, recognized like, yes, we want that level of like heightened independence of young people, like them really taking ownership of their learning. But we also have to remember that potentially for the past 9-10 years, they've been in more compliance type teaching situations, and they may not be 100% ready for that yet. And so giving, you know, them a little grace to kind of learn what it's like to be an independent learner again, but also extending that to myself, while I also find, you know, in all that free time that teachers get, a little moment to rework the curriculum so that it can really set the stage for that level of independence that I'm hoping for.
I like your point about learner agency, and I think of a graphic that Trevor McKenzie has created about the swimming pool. We can't drop our students right into the deep end. Right. If they've been used to this very prescriptive, very compliance-oriented system of learning for so long, we can't suddenly just turn everything over to them. It has to be a scaffolded, sort of a gradual transition, right? I like how you put that. And I'm glad, by the way, to hear that you've got some really supportive admin who are supportive of this idea of agency and ownership of learning on the part of students. Well, Brian, you love to write, and your work on Medium.com is a big part of what connected the two of us. So tell us more about that. What fuels you to write about your professional learning journey?
I mean, I've been doing so much over, you know, I've been in education now for 17, 18 years, and my role has shifted in so many different ways. And I found that writing kind of helped me make sense out of the things that I was seeing and experiencing at all of these different various levels. It also gives me a chance to kind of share ideas and thoughts with an audience that like isn't an echo chamber. So, you know, it's going out to the world. So anyone can kind of question and comment. And so I like that aspect of it too. But one of the things that I've been thinking as I write about education more recently, I've been thinking about how to share like more positive stories about the profession, because there's all these, you know, I mean, yes, teaching is tough and there are a lot of people leaving the profession for valid, like, I don't want to say anything about their valid reasons for leaving, but there's also valid reasons that people are staying and people like me that are going back to the classroom to try to do what we think is best for learning conditions for young people. And so I want to make sure that there are some positive stories out there to show some balance with that as well. And I like storytelling.
So good. Simple as that. And I like what you're saying. And you worded that carefully. We don't want to delegitimize or we don't want to take away from the stories of defeat. But on the other hand, teaching is so much more than that. And there are great things happening in education. Brian, your professional education career has given you such a rich variety of insights and perspectives. Not many people can say they've been in the different roles and positions that you've been in. So what is setting you on fire about being back in the classroom with students this year?
I love being around kids. So in my last role, I worked for the Office of School Design here in New York City, and I got to observe young people working with their teachers and their school communities to reimagine existing spaces, to reimagine brand new schools that haven't been seen before in New York City. And I was so inspired. I mean, my work really at that point was more like I was facilitating the conversation. I was like, no, this isn't good enough. Like, I need to be in the conversation with the young people. And that's what really drove me back, that curiosity about working with kids in this new way to like reimagine what school can be. So seeing them as partners in the redesign process. But I was also curious, you know, my philosophy about teaching and learning has also changed and evolved so much over the years that, and it's like, I want to put my money where my mouth is. You know, I can say a lot of stuff, but I want to actually do the stuff. And there's magic working with kids. And I've had so many of those magical moments already this year that, like, I mean, you know, if we go back to when I was talking about like the struggle that I was going through, there was a day like it hit me hard on one of my professional periods in the middle of the day. And as a class transitioned into my classroom, a young man walks by and he looks at me, he's like, are you okay, Mr. Glover? Like, you look upset. And I'm like, it's not about anything. It's just like, what's going on up here? Like, I'm really like wanting to do better and the lessons just haven't got there yet. And he sat there and he listened to me like really intensely. And then he just stopped at the end. He was like, you know, I want to just let you know, like, I think you're doing a great job. And I was like, oh my God, like, you have no idea how much I needed to hear that right now. Like, you're amazing. And so just moments like that, where these young people become more than just the kid in the classroom. You know, I'm also blessed that I get to work in a school for music and theater. So watching students step out of the classroom and get up on a stage and do like this amazing genius level art, like the voices, the singing. I saw a young man who is merely mute in class, like does not participate much at all, gets up on stage and grabs the mic and starts, this was during a rap DJing portion of one of our performances, and with zero rehearsal, owned the entire stage and audience. It was the most fascinating freestyle moment I had ever seen in my entire life. And it's that kind of magic that I was missing. And I'm so glad that I'm a part of it again. So that's keeping that fire burning like really intensely.
Well, I want to, again, put in a plug for Brian's work on Medium.com. I've had the privilege of reading some of the accounts that you teased right there. And the way that you characterize some of those moments from the classroom and even hearing that story of the young man who gave the affirmation, I mean, that makes it all worth it. Those are really special, affirming moments. Well, Brian, how are you looking to grow professionally and improve your practice this year? You've written about your journey in assessment and ungrading practices. So can you tell us more about that?
Yes, that was, I felt like that was going to be an early win towards bringing sort of my new vision for what learning can be to life. Like, let's let go of traditional grading practices and move right into mastery-based grading. And so I did. The school has been very supportive. They're like, you know, go for it. We want to see kids focused on learning instead of handing it in. We want to see them chasing knowledge instead of numbers. And so those kinds of pieces, like, so I'm very happy to have the support. It's not as good as I'd like it to be yet. You know, it's going to be a work in progress. And it's almost, I feel like there's a little bit of like first year teacher life is coming back to haunt me in year 17 or 18. So, you know, so in a lot of ways, things are starting from scratch, but there have been some really interesting high points where kids, when we get close to the end of a marking period, are speaking about skills and knowledge that they've gained rather than numbers and assignments that they've turned in. So the conversation shifted a little bit. And then the school said, well, hey, it's the Department of Education. We have to give a single number on the report card. So how are you going to do that? And so I conferred with the kids. I said, you know, read your workflow, read your mastery of your different skills and knowledge, and then tell me what you think the number should be. So every kid wrote me a story. They wrote me about their own individual work. And I tell you, like 99% of the kids were either perfectly accurate or low graded themselves. And I was really impressed with their honesty and their awareness of the work that they've done. So that was like huge high point for me.
Often there's an assumption that if we give students the opportunity or the power to self-assess, they will give themselves artificially way too high. You know, they'll grade themselves much too high. But in my experience, often students are pretty accurate. Sometimes, as you said, they'll even low grade themselves because they're trying to be careful. They're very conscious of overshooting the mark. And it can be such a rewarding process. Wow. For you to go through that with your students, there's a lot of trust there, right? And it goes both ways between teacher and student. And so I commend you for that. Well, I like to hear from educators, Brian. What is setting you on fire outside of the school building? So tell us about another area of learning for you. What is it that ignites your passions when you leave the classroom?
I have been playing around with savory baking. So I started bread baking a couple of, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago. I wanted to control the food that I ate and the ingredients of the food that I was eating. And that kind of has expanded now. So I'm all about savory baking, which is fun and delicious and a great thing to self-assess and learn from. I also have been playing around, you know, because of writing. I've started this interest now. I've got this idea in my head to like actually write a fictional novel, but I want it to be sort of horror comedy. So we're going to see what comes of that. So, you know, you've seen a couple of my stories outside of education. I'm playing around with different, you know, genres.
Tell us more about the horror comedy. How do those two genres mix?
I really love, my favorite author in the world is Christopher Moore, and he takes like comedy and monsters and just to the next level. I completely idolize that guy, but very recently I've just been into reading sort of horror-like true crime, that kind of sort of fictional novel, and it's been sort of a fun ride. And then as I'm reading, because I've been writing more, I start to recognize, oh, that's an interesting technique. That's an interesting way they ended that sentence. And so then I'm like, well, could I do that? And so, yeah, so I'm thinking about playing around with some ideas and just seeing what happens. I might do some horror flash fiction just to see and test out the waters before I dive in deep.
Very, very fun. You know, the movie that comes to my mind actually is Shaun of the Dead. Did you see that one?
Shaun of the Dead is a great one. Army of Darkness. Like, there's so many good ones out there. Yeah.
Oh, my. Okay. Share about a phone app, Brian, a personal habit, or maybe a productivity hack that contributes to your success and keeps your fire burning. So in this time when teacher sustainability and efficiency is everything, what is one thing that teachers can do to protect their time and preserve their sanity?
Something that helps me. I'm a big idea guy. Things go through my head constantly, and I've got to figure out how to tame all of the stuff that goes through. One thing that has been a huge help for me has been the program Rome Research. So I use that to collect ideas, whether it's about, you know, topics for writing, ideas for education, documenting my process of developing curriculum. You know, all of that stuff goes in there, and it allows me to like add links between things, and I end up with this sort of hodgepodge graph of topical knowledge that I can stream and connect to itself that reminds me of my own sort of crazy brain function that goes on. So it takes what's up here and gets it out a little bit so that I don't have to dwell on it or likely forget it because something else, you know, the bouncing red ball floats in front of my eyes and I change direction. Yeah.
So one more time, that was called Rome Research?
Rome Research, yeah. It's a paid program, but I think there are others that are similar to that that are free to use. I just don't know about the user experience with those yet. Like LogSec, I think, is one.
All right, fair enough. Well, Brian, it is time for your quick picks. Here we want to know the education voices and resources that are shaping your practice and inspiring your thinking today. So if you're feeling ready, let's start at X. Tell us about one account we should follow there and share why they've been inspiring you lately.
outside of the teachers that I like to follow for inspiration, I really appreciate the folks that are trying to rethink the systems that govern education. So Akil Bellow, A-K-I-L Bellow, is a great account to follow, as well as The Jose Vilson, V-I-L-S-O-N. Those are two great accounts.
All right. Next, point us to an ed tech tool that you currently love using in your classroom or somewhere in your professional practice.
I tend to shy away from gimmicky ed tech things. So sure. Unless it's about creation and design and taking things out of your head and putting them into the real world. So physically, like physical computing, I think about Hummingbird Robotics and Microbits, which are great for creating with. But I recently was exposed to Adobe Express, which teachers in New York City have access to. And the capacity to create and design with that is something I'm going to be incorporating into my classroom in my next unit. It's pretty cool.
I just gave a workshop on Canva yesterday. Adobe Express is right in that same space. They do a lot of the same things. Recommend a book, Brian, one that you've been reading lately, or perhaps one of your all-time faves, and tell us why you recommend it.
Well, I'll go two just because I was talking about horror fiction. So sure. I just recently finished Chasing the Boogeyman by Richard Chismar. Was quite a ride. That one was great. But as far as like my thinking concerning like how I'm viewing education and redesign processes, I loved Imaginable by Jane McGonigal.
Okay. What about podcasts? We're here on a podcast. Do you listen to podcasts? Do you subscribe? Tell us about one that you enjoy. And if not, feel free to take it in another direction.
Well, I'm definitely a reader on the trains. Podcasting is not something that I can necessarily do on my commutes very well. But I do tune in when there are educators that are of high interest. Like I've been checking out Teachers on Fire podcasting. Yeah. But I also really appreciate any podcast. Recently, I listened to Coconut Thinking, which interviewed Gary Steger, one of my all-time favorite educators for, inventing to learn. So he has that interview with Gary Steger on Coconut Thinking. It will push your brain and your thinking in some amazing new ways.
And what's the idea behind Coconut Thinking? Do you know where that title comes from?
I looked into it, and I think it has to do with like sort of the different layers and like getting through the coconut to the good stuff in the middle.
Okay, that makes sense. And next up, we've got YouTube channels. Is there one that you enjoy or find helpful in your classroom?
I love Kurzgesagt. So that's a German word for in a nutshell. And they do these amazing animations for science and society sort of economic pieces that are just really extraordinary. And they're really quick videos that can spark thinking, questioning, and conversation.
And then just for fun, Brian, what are you streaming during your downtime right now, whether it's Netflix, Disney, Apple, Prime, wherever it might be? What are you enjoying when you've got no brain power left for anything productive?
Yeah, it's most days. So I'm finishing up Loki season 2. I love the new Futurama episodes. I'm checking those out, rewatching Walking Dead. But I am also super excited for Planet Earth 3 that is coming out. So I'm trying to find that on BBC.
All right. Well, Brian, for those interested in connecting with you and following you online, what are the best places for them to go?
I find myself most often now on LinkedIn. My name tag has @BrianGEDU. That's for my LinkedIn. You can also find me on X, which I had kind of taken a sort of mini break from, but leave it to Teachers on Fire to pull me back in. I've been going back every day again, so appreciate that push, Tim. But yeah, those look for this name on LinkedIn and on Twitter.
Well, Brian, you've been such a valuable connection to me. Thank you so much for all that you're doing to share your learning. I think that's such a valuable practice, and it just sparks and ignites other sequences of learning for other educators around the world. So thank you for sharing your time with the podcast today. Teachers on Fire, I'm your host, Tim Cavey, and I'm so grateful that you decided to spend some of your day listening to this podcast. I hope that in some way the content you heard here from Brian sparked your thinking and ignited your practice, and I'll meet you next week right here on the Teachers on Fire podcast. Take care, educators. Take an opportunity to share an encouraging message to lift up a colleague, and keep your own fire for learning burning bright. Bye-bye.